Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. 4.5 years ago, Dan Brentrow sat by his daughter's side as she was diagnosed with a rare disease, one that could confine her to a wheelchair before high school graduation. Friedreich's ataxia stills mobility, but it also targets the heart and other organs. Many patients die in their 20s. Brentrow's daughter, Raina, is now 16. Her father still believes in a bright future for the young woman, partially because he has new reason to. Peter Vitiello is a research scientist at Sanford Health. He was part of a study that showed promising results, but as happens to many research efforts, the funding ran out before the ideas did. The research could potentially help patients with Friedreich's ataxia. It could potentially help Raina. How the men who were strangers found each other and what they are doing to raise funds for medical research in a non-traditional way has caught the attention of media outlets throughout the region. And they join me now in the SDPB studios at the University of Sioux Falls. Dan Brentrow, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having us.
Pete, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you.
Dan, start by telling me about Raina.
Sure. She's a fabulous kid. She's just going to turn 17 here at the end of this month. She's a junior at Lincoln High School. She loves to write. She loves theater. She is the oldest and is wise beyond her years.
Take me back 4.5 years ago to how do you first notice there's a problem? What brings you to the doctor's office in the first place?
Sure. She had, I think, a regular appointment with her pediatrician, and they run through some various things, and she was not gaining weight as fast as they thought she should be. And then the pediatrician noticed there was an issue with her gait, meaning when she walks a straight line, there are some balance issues. It's something that should be normal and easy for everyone. And in her case, something was a little bit off. And the remarkable thing is that it's not something that we noticed. It's something that the pediatrician noticed. And so he sent her out for testing. You get on a list with a specialist, like a neurologist, and it was months out. It was not something that we thought was urgent. I had forgotten about, the specialist appointment that had been set out into the future. She goes to meet with Dr. Michael Kruer at the Sanford Children's Facility, the Castle, and they run through a various series of tests, and one of them is where you cross your knee over your other leg, and then they hit your knee with a hammer, and then there's a reflex. Mm. And everybody knows what that looks like, and this is one of those diseases where there is no response. And it's that moment where it doesn't happen, and they try it over and over again, and it doesn't. And then when Dr. Kruer goes and gets his interns and the other young doctors that are learning about neurology and shows them this is what it looks like when this happens, there are a handful of things that would cause that, and so they start doing the differential diagnosis to figure out which one it's most likely to be, and start there. At the end of that appointment, we were told that it was working hypothesis is that it was Friedreich's ataxia, which is a neurodegenerative disorder, and it's caused by a genetic anomaly that both parents give to their child. It's rare enough that only 1 in 50 or 60,000 people have it in the United States, and only 1 in 350,000 worldwide. At the time, though, they take a blood sample and send it out for a genetic test, and that process takes 6 or 7 weeks. And so that was a long, long month of May plus a couple weeks on either side, where we were waiting for the results and had a lot of time to research about what this thing might be, and we were quite worried that this was what it was going to be.
Right, that's a lot of time on the internet.
It is.
To scare yourself.
The other part, though, is that I tried to remain objective about it because we didn't know.
Right.
And the, for better or worse, the other things on the list were things that were probably worse, like brain cancer or other things. And so rather than just go with half information, I just kind of abstained for that few weeks. Just, let's just wait and see, and we'll find out, when we find out.
And she's fine at this point. From her perspective, she's feeling fine. When do you start seeing the effects of this?
So anybody that knew her at that period of time would never have noticed. She gets the diagnosis as like a seventh grader, proceeds on with her summer and with junior high, and you know, nobody really has any idea that there's anything wrong. What they tell you is that you know, because this disease is attacking the nerves and the heart and potentially the eye and the pancreas, that you will develop progressively weaker skills with your mobility. You're going to progressively develop heart disease. You can develop blindness in rare cases, and then you can develop diabetes because your pancreas is not functioning correctly. And they tell you that the trajectory of this is that, you know, typically your child will be in a wheelchair by the end of high school. And so we're going through seventh and eighth grades and her freshman year of high school, and, you know, we're thinking that we're lucky that, that she has a mild case of this. Mm-hmm. And every week, you know, you don't notice something. Every month, you may not notice something. Every 6 months, maybe, if you were able to kind of step back and see this happening and unfolding. And that's actually how often she goes to see her cardiologist, because they can't see changes any more quickly than that in a patient like her. But as time goes on, it's harder and harder for her to do things. Not just walking, but going up and down stairs, maintaining her balance. And so she would fall from time to time. And then more frequently, she had trouble navigating the busy, crowded hallways at Lincoln High School. And so eventually, by the beginning of her sophomore year in high school, she is in a wheelchair for the school day, because it's just safer, mm-hmm. and it's difficult for her to walk a straight line. And it's also very taxing for her to walk. You know, she can summon her energy to do it and pull it off. But every time she's doing that, it's taking away an hour of the end of the day.
Right.
And so she has, you know, she fatigues easily, and she just needs, you know, to conserve her energy. And so she rolls around high school, and then the rest of the time she, you know, uses an arm when we're walking, or the handrail. And so, and then, you know, meanwhile, everything is just slowly progressing forward.
I saw her in a play this summer. That must have been exhausting for her then, to really summon the energy for Shakespeare in the park.
Yes.
So on uneven terrain as well.
She absolutely loves theater. And I can't remember the number. I think she's been in 24 productions over the last few years, and loves every part of it. And she will sit there in adult productions and critique the way that they approach things, and critique the way that they pulled off the ending. You know, should point out that Dad, they had three endings and they only needed one. And so she's loved to continue this process, but there are not a lot of roles designed for children that are not fully ambulatory.
Right.
And they've gotten around that in a couple of ways, where they gave her roles where she was seated and nobody knew that she was supposed to stand up. There was a pair of roles where the character was someone suited for a cane, like an old sorceress. And I think the one in Shakespeare, she had a cane for that.
Yeah.
And so it fit with the part, and then it fit with the character. And so she's able to do those. And as it moves on, you know, there aren't a lot of roles like that. And so she's going to have to become cast, you know, in a wheelchair, or take on different roles in the production, like behind the scenes. And so that's, I think, been very frustrating for her, mm-hmm. because she just loves the part about being on the stage and taking on the character. And not to have the body that will listen to what the actress wants it to do, I think, is really hard.
I want to jump to the other side of this story now, before the two of you have met. And Pete, take me to this research study that you're a part of that the funding dries up for. What are you working on?
Yeah, so my laboratory is mainly focused at the time on lung development and lung disease. However, there's a relationship between Sanford and the Mayo Clinic that sponsors startup projects. And I had somebody at the Mayo Clinic come and talk to me, and she had worked on Friedreich's ataxia her whole career, and said, "Hey, we found this molecule that I heard you might have, you might be able to study, and you might be able to understand and tell us what it is and how it behaves." Just because my laboratory also studies antioxidant enzymes in disease processes, and this happened to be one of those antioxidant enzymes that came out. So we said, "Oh, You know, if it, you're seeing this come through in your Friedreich's ataxia studies, maybe this is important to understand just how these cells behave normally and then how they behave in some a patient like Raina. And we can understand a little bit more about the disease and come up with an idea that that isn't already being tested in the clinic. So we were able to work on a study together for around 1 year that was sponsored by Sanford Funds. However, we got to the end of that study and, you know, it's very difficult in research where this wasn't my area of expertise necessarily. So I had to go back and keep doing what I was doing in the lab. And then, unfortunately, my collaborator Mayo, a couple years ago, retired as well. Mm-hmm. So the study just kind of sat on the shelf and I forgot about it for 3 or 4 years or so until I was able to meet Dan.
How common is it for you to sort of find, you know, something that's promising or maybe, you know, piques your interest a little bit? You know in your gut and, you know, scientifically that there's more work to be done, but now you can't. How often does that happen and how does that sort of affect you as a researcher?
Yeah, the toughest thing is trying to figure out how to prioritize what you're doing in order to make the best progress on those projects. So at any given time, laboratories are doing things that they're funded for, and they're doing work that they're not funded for as well. You figure out how to make every dollar count.
Okay.
And but there comes a time where, you know, there's an expense, and I've been learning how to manage those as a scientist, and you have to make those sorts of decisions. And I had to prioritize some of the other studies that we were doing that were much further along. So this was something I thought I was intellectually engaged in, I thought was really interesting. But it really wasn't something I could prioritize at that time. But you, even though you put it down, you never forget that sort of stuff. So, mm-hmm. You know, maybe you're somewhere, you're reading something or talking to another scientist that shows some interesting findings and you're able to connect the dots. So you just kind of always keep it on the back shelf and you never know when that information is going to be helpful.
Let's connect the dots, Dan. How do you two end up meeting? That's quite a story.
The answer, depending on who you ask, is either by chance, by luck, or by prayer. And I don't know which one it is, but back in September, I decided sort of on a whim to run a half marathon here in Sioux Falls. I had always wanted to do it. I'm apparently a casual runner. I think that's the term that best describes how I approach running. And so I trained for the Sioux Falls Half Marathon by eating a lot of spaghetti and resting on Saturday and ran it in 2 hours and change and felt so excited about that the next day that I called up my cousin. She works for Sanford as well and the marketing department. And she had run 10 marathons in her lifetime. And I had this idea that I should run a full marathon using my half marathon as proof that, you know, I could get at least that far. And so she came up with this idea that we could run the Twin Cities Marathon together three weeks later, 20 days later at that point in time. And I was thinking that's a lot of spaghetti to eat. And she came up with a plan for us to do that. So I committed to running this full marathon with her just because it's one of those things on your bucket list. And after a week's worth of her tutelage on the trails, putting in the miles, discovered through a random accident that one of the other Friedreich's ataxia dads was also running this marathon. He's not from Sioux Falls, he's from Watertown, and was raising money for it. And so I got in touch with him that day, and so now this is 2 weeks out before the marathon, and found out how to get my page set up to raise money, and we joined in and did that together. And I had set a goal of $1,000 a mile at that point in time, and in 13 days we accomplished that. And so I'm you know, in the Twin Cities running the 26 miles and realizing what we had accomplished in that short time. That if I had woken up on September 1st with a plan like this, there's no way I would have thought this is a sensible way to spend your month, or that it's even feasible. And so the marathon is on October 1st. I'm running this on October 1st, 4.5 hours to myself to think about this. And I think, well, I'm waking up on October 1st. What do I do intentionally to make this month even better than the one we just had? And run through some ideas of how to approach this momentum and this challenge that we're facing. And in my mind, settle on the idea of raising 5 times as much money and taking the money over to Sanford and having them do a study of some kind. And I had no concept of what that meant, of what that money would do, and probably was aware of how naive that was. And in hindsight, it doesn't work that way. I know that it doesn't work that way. You don't just show up and say, here's some money, would you please take the next important step to cure my daughter's rare disease. And drafted an email and sent it to my cousin in the marketing department and said, can you figure out where this needs to go over at Sanford Research? And she sent it, and it went to the wrong place, and then it went to another wrong place, and then eventually it ended up on Ben Ford's desk. And that was the right place. It was probably one of only two places in that entire building where it would have gotten a positive response other than just, oh, this poor dad, I wish there was something that we could do. And so Ben reached out, and that was the beginning of this next chapter.
Pete, pick up the story there. How do you get back involved in this?
Yeah, so Ben Ford, who Dan mentioned, had worked in my laboratory as my research associate for 6 years, and was actually the one that was helping conduct those studies back in 2012, 2013 originally. So he was probably one of only maybe two or three people that actually had that intimate knowledge that we were even doing those studies, just because they were outside of what we normally did. And, we don't really go around advertising, kind of little startup projects you're working on in science. However, he's currently in a position where he's working with our coordination of rare diseases office at Sanford. I happen to work in our institute's very focused on rare disease research, and Friedreich's ataxia definitely fits that definition. So eventually that email circulated around to Ben, and with that intimate knowledge, he came to me and asked, is this somebody that you'd be interested in talking to about what we were doing, 5 years ago? And I'm a PhD scientist, so my laboratory really focuses on more of like fundamental research and doing discoveries. When you think of a science laboratory look, that's where I am at the lab bench. So I don't really interact with patients and families very often. So I was a little hesitant to say, what we can do for Dan and Raina in this situation, but certainly knew we have a culture where we want to support our community, and knew reaching out was the right thing to do. So I believe we looked it up, and we had first met on October 20th, so maybe around 6 weeks ago or so.
Wow. We're going to take a break and come back with more of this story in a few minutes. If you're just tuning in, we've been talking with Dan Brentrow and Dr. Pete Vitiello about researching rare disease and how it impacts Dan's daughter, Raina. And welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. My guests today, Dan Brentrow and Pete Vitiello. Dr. Vitiello is a research scientist at Sanford Health, and Dan Brentrow is many things, but today he's joining us as a father whose daughter, Raina, suffers from Friedreich's ataxia. And we're talking about how the two sort of came together coincidentally and are now raising money. On thefinishline.org is the website, thefinishline.org. And Dan, give me an idea of what the goal is here. It's an ambitious goal, but not necessarily more ambitious than running a marathon when your main goal is to eat spaghetti. So I think this is doable for right. You. Give us an idea of what the overview is for the fundraising.
Sure. We are raising $75,000 as fast as we can. The goal is within 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. The $75,000 is a figure that was not picked out of thin air, but I, after meeting Dr. Vitiello and finding out about this, this half-finished or this unfinished research study, asked him what it would take to start it again in order to take the science where he thought it was going to go and to get some data that would support, bigger, larger grants through traditional funding mechanisms. And he spent a few days on that, and the answer was $75,460 or so. And it broke it out for staff. He's going to have a full-time PhD, postdoc lab tech on this. There's going to be reagents and testing supplies, third-party testing, cell lines, research mice, caring for the mice for a year. And it omits anything as far as overhead or administrative costs. This is just the cost of doing hard science. And the study itself is going to pick up where the previous research left off. And there's this enzyme that's called this PRDX3. The way to describe it, I guess, is like it's a custodian for the inside of your cells, where it's going around and cleaning up the toxic byproducts that would have the potential to cause cell damage. And this PRDX3, the theory is that it neutralizes those before they can become a problem. And this PRDX3 enzyme is a companion to the frataxin protein. And so at the beginning we talked about Raina is deficient in a protein. It's the frataxin protein that she doesn't have enough of. She's walking around with a quarter to a third of what the average person would have. And most of the research, at least initially, was to try to figure out how to replenish her frataxin levels, and that's been difficult to do. They have not been able to figure that out. And so the other ideas then are you find other targets within the disease of something that you can control that can have a positive impact on her well-being. And so the working assumption is that this PRDX3 enzyme, this sort of janitor for the cell, is something that if you could harness it and make it work harder or make more of it, then even though she doesn't have enough frataxin, her cells are staying just as clean. So instead of building yourself a bigger house, just hiring more cleaning staff to keep the house clean. And that's sort of the working hypothesis. You know, when you work backwards from the disease process, we know that Friedreich's ataxia ultimately causes Raina's nerve cells, heart cells, pancreas cells, and eye cells to die sooner than they should. We know that they're dying through oxidative stress. We don't know any of the intermediate steps between that she has a lack of frataxin and what causes that early cell death. And so this is a process of helping chart the map, the path that this disease takes by which it conducts the dysfunction in her cells. And so this is the first step. And nobody has done this. Nobody has the answer to this. And it was just remarkable that you would find something like this by chance that we can then start working on immediately.
Pete, obviously in research science, it's possible that this is a dead end, that you find that you're really only working to eliminate something and then move on to the next possibility. On the flip side of that, what is possible if you're on the track of something meaningful?
Yeah, well, you know, not actively working in Friedreich's ataxia for several years, and I wasn't the main person pushing that project at the time. The first thing we had to do was really vet these ideas off of some scientists out there, because you worry about that dead end, or maybe it's redundant and somebody else has discovered this and they're already doing that work. In science, a running joke is there's no journal of negative results. So the only way you figure out what people have done is to go talk to them. So through a lot of Dan's connections, we were actually able to have some conversations with the people who are the world's leaders in FA and kind of at least introduce some of our ideas and some of our findings and at least see, is this plausible? Do you think this is a good idea to pursue? And certainly that foundation is there. And as far as in trajectory and where this could go, it's a little tough. There's a little bit of a blend going on, and certainly Dan and Raina are quite motivating for me, where normally as a scientist, you take the logical steps when you're researching something, you A to B, B to C, so on and so forth. However, there's an emotional side too, obviously, especially in biomedical research. You try to disconnect those things typically. However, Dan's passion, we're trying to figure out what are the most essential experiments we need to figure out, is this going to go somewhere where we can continue doing further studies on it because it is a target that we're interested in? This is something that could help slow the progression of the disease, or is it a dead end? So that's what we've done here, is try to really talk about those experiments that are going to delineate that trajectory and figure out as soon as possible if this discovery has value in the disease or not.
Making a connection with a family. You've met Raina, I take it, at
yes.
this point. Making a connection with not only her father, but with the girl herself. How will that change you as a researcher for the rest of your career?
You know, when I first got interested in biology in high school, I lived down the street from a hospital. So I went down there one summer and asked them about interning. And I did that in a pediatric floor for a summer. However, within a week, I could tell that being in a hospital, it just didn't suit. It didn't suit me. I didn't like going home at the end. And even though they were doing amazing things, they were also just, you know, seeing the hardships was very difficult for me. So I was able to redirect that passion in the research laboratory. It's very interesting to interact with somebody like Raina and parents like parent like Dan, because you really get to see that emotional side. And it just makes me want to put my head down and do whatever I can. Whether it's working on some of these, the project we have going, or whether it's something even indirect, if I can leverage my position to do something for Dan and Raina, and for Friedreich's ataxia patients that hasn't been done before, whether it's in my lab or helping support the research in that community, I feel very committed now. Mm.
Dan, let's talk about how Raina is processing this whole notion of what's going on from the research, from the decline of her mobility, first of all, to how she's looking. I have a 16-year-old daughter. I know the conversations we're having now about college and graduate school and, you know, different things that she can do. Raina has conversations about those same things with this as part of her life. How is she handling the process of the disease? And then let's talk about how she's handling the process of hope in medical research.
The story I like to tell goes back to the very first day after her diagnosis. It was a 2 or 3 hour appointment with Dr. Kruer, and we leave the building, and they have a valet to bring you your car for the patients. And so we're waiting there. It's a couple minute wait, and her mom says to Raina, "Would you like to sit down while we wait?" And without missing a beat, she says, "No, I'll stand while I still can." And I really think that was the, like I said, she's wise beyond her years. And I think that was the exact right thing that her parents needed to hear. And that's how I've approached the last 4.5 years, is to do what we can with what we have, stay optimistic, and you know, she's a human, she's a teenager, and we're a family, and there's nothing different about us than anybody else. Every family has struggles. This one is just ours. Every teenager has struggles. This one is just one of hers. She has her sights set on big things, and she, you know, is moving towards those. She has days like we all do where she doubts the path, and she has days where she's you know, ultra confident in those. And so that's how she's approaching this, is I think like everybody would. You can't change it. You just make the most of it, and we keep moving ahead.
And again, if you're just tuning in, Dan Brentro and Pete Vitiello, the fundraiser that they're doing is on thefinishline.org. They're trying to raise $75,000 in 3 weeks. Well on your way as of this morning. A very good start to that. Looking for research for Friedreich's ataxia. How do you feel, Dan, about just the process of medical research? And you have a confidence that this problem can be solved. That you know, where does that come from? That sort of optimism and confidence in sort of human potential here?
Well, I think a lot of it stems just from how fast medical research has moved over the last, you know, 20 or 30 years in all sorts of diseases, that we're finding cures for things that we thought were incurable. And this is no different. You know, it was 1997 or 1998 when they discovered that this disease, Friedreich's ataxia, is caused by this protein deficiency, and it's a genetic anomaly. For the previous 100 years since it had been discovered, nobody knew why, you know, why it happened. They just knew it did. And you would go to places like the Mayo Clinic as recently as the 1990s, and they would tell you, there is nothing that we can do. And then they went home. And there are actually hundreds or perhaps 1,000 or more patients in the United States that got that news back in the 90s and have no idea that the research has moved ahead because of how many things have happened since that discovery. And it's really, in my mind, it's just a matter of hours and dollars, because all of the things that we've ever wanted to do in science, whether it's, you know, going into space, or whether it's curing disease or understanding things or building bridges, it just takes time and dollars. And rare diseases don't get the same time. They don't get the same dollars as other diseases. You know, heart disease has $2 billion spent on it per year. Autism has hundreds of millions of dollars of private money, and then, you know, hundreds of million more of public funding. Friedreich's ataxia has a private foundation that's the leading source of revenue to fund all of these projects, and it has a budget of $4 million a year. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the luxury of dollars, and it doesn't have the luxury of wasting those dollars, and it has to have proven hard science behind it. So that's the focus of this, is that we are raising private funding for two reasons. One is because we have to establish the basic science behind Dr. Vitiello's hypotheses. They make a lot of sense. The stuff that I've read within the journal articles makes a lot of sense, that this is a great place to be. This makes a lot of sense. This PRDX3 enzyme shows up in literature for people unrelated to Friedreich's ataxia research, showing that, at least in mice, that if you don't have enough of it, you have heart problems. If you have more than enough, you don't have heart problems. And then if you don't have enough, you have pancreas problems in mice. And if you have too much, you don't have pancreas problems in mice. And so these people were discovering this on the edges without knowing its implication for this disease. And so, you know, it's really easy for me to say this looks like we're on the right path. But the first step is the basic hard science to show statistically, quantitatively, that we're on that path. And once we do that, then we can open up, you know, the floodgates for more. The traditional funding sources, or, you know, the government, the federal government through the NIH, provides grant funding. The FARA Research Alliance in Philadelphia is this private foundation that provides money, and they have an annual calendar. So you have to have your stuff submitted by a certain date, and then they ask for more, and then they review it, and then they ask for more information, and then eventually they do a blind review and approve or disapprove of the ideas. And the same thing happens on the federal level. And the reason for the careful process is because we don't have excess money. They can't waste it, so they're very careful about who they give it to. And it's on this annual plan for a reason. And this particular study doesn't fit any of those particular, or those traditional models. We have what I like to call a shovel-ready project that can begin the moment that we get to $75,000. And we have the premise of the study already established, and we've had, you know, people look at it and say this makes sense, go do it, and then come back and ask for more money when you can prove the data behind it. And so it's this unique situation that we can accelerate this process by 6 to 9 to 24 months of what it would normally take just to get the money on site. And we hope that if we can fund this now, that we would actually have data by April that would show us, yes, this is the right path, or no, let's retool and figure out where to take this next.
Pete, spin this forward for me and tell me, is it possible that this research helps Raina in her lifetime?
You know, this is why we do it, because you have to go in thinking that, and, you know, having this personal association now with Dan and Raina, that's certainly the mentality. As far as taking the right steps along the way to make sure we're not kind of, missing something, though, is where I have to make sure we're doing the right experiments here. But I do think, as far as kind of Dan's enthusiasm, and he's been a real go-getter getting into the literature himself, and I received several emails from him, usually late at night, and I could tell he's connecting the dots, and he's really excited about this. It's just motivating that you think we can take this information and look at it from the perspective of Friedreich's ataxia and find something there that's going to be beneficial. It may not be this direct target, but maybe this starts another domino in motion, and we find something else. Mm-hmm. So as far as, the benefits of what we're doing, but doing it in a timeline where, you know, we want to see Raina benefit, that's where, when Dan described kind of the fast track process, with the funding that he's initiating, that's what's really exciting about this, is okay, maybe we can overcome some of those hurdles and do the critical experiments immediately rather than waiting, you know, 1, 2, 3 or years or never being able to do it.
If Raina's writing the script and she only needs one ending, right, at this point.
That's right. she's gonna want the perfect ending, and I think we're doing everything, you know, that we can for that. The foreshadowing in this, if she were crafting this, is just remarkable. The night before the marathon, we are in a group with all the families that are raising money for Friedreich's ataxia, and one of the other FA dads, Tom Batta from Watertown, was talking about how the finish line tomorrow of this marathon is not our finish line. We will still be running. And it became sort of the perfect idea for how to name this, thefinishline.org, because that's what we're shooting for.
Dan Brentrow and Dr. Pete Vitiello. Pete is a research scientist at Sanford Health. Dan's daughter, Raina, is suffering from Friedreich's ataxia. That website again, thefinishline.org. They're looking to raise $75,000 in 3 weeks for a Christmas present of starting this funding. Gentlemen, thank you both so much for coming. Say hi to Raina for us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.